From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
You might think that a road trip with a bunch of board gaming nerds would be all sex and drugs and rock and roll. Well, let me tell you, you're right, because... because... we keep our rock and roll loud on the road, our favourite drug is caffeine, and as far as sex goes, well, we keep it to ourselves. Or is that with ourselves? I'm not sure. Help me out. Mark, please.
Speak for yourself, Trent. I'm not going there.
It's Trent and Mark on the Dice Men Cometh here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Good evening.
Are you well?
I am.
That's good. Look, we have got another, just for a change, action-packed show of champagne radio tonight. We are going to have a visitor.
Champagne radio.
We're going to have a visitor in the studio, Richard from the DAK Bunker Rats. Sounds exciting to talk to us about playing games with little toys and stuff. It's going to be exciting. We're going to have some sort of news, you know.
You've got no idea what's coming up in the show, do you?
And finally, what people have been waiting for 3 weeks... we're going to talk about those party games. Party, 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 party.
Yeah, in fact, I got my hands on one just recently that we had a play of, and we'll talk about that next here on The Dice Men Cometh with Soundgarden alive in the super unknown. Edge Radio 99.3 FM, The Dice Men Cometh with Trent and Mark and Soundgarden. Some albums just... well, they age like a fine wine, and occasionally they get a little bit of a dust off and a remaster. In that case, Super Unknown, the title track. If I had to nominate a favourite album ever, that would be it.
Fantastic. Well, I was just saying to you, I only know one Soundgarden album, the one with Black Hole Sun, and
yes,
and this is it.
This is the one.
Brilliant.
Yes. You know, I was the guy in the shorts and the Doc Martin boots on the beach.
Right.
That was me.
Okay.
That was my era, man.
Fantastic.
All right, what have we been playing lately?
I was going to say, apart from playing music, we've been playing games. Now, I, sir, am going to blow your mind.
Oh, yeah?
Because a game I played, not something you'd normally catch me talking about in public, let alone on a tabletop games radio station.
Right.
It's a game by a little game company you might have heard of called Hasbro.
Have you been playing, like, Kinect 4 or something?
Worse!
Seriously, have you just dipped a toe back into the mass market?
No. I have been introduced to, by a lovely friend of mine, a game called Monopoly Deal!
No!
Not Monopoly!
No!
Monopoly Deal!
Don't tell me! Okay, we should explain. If anyone... So, we're hardcore board gaming nerds.
Hardcore!
Okay, so we eat dice for breakfast in here. And Monopoly, it's a joke. It's certainly not a great game. And unfortunately, it's the game that seems to define our hobby in the minds of most people.
Oh, so many times when you say to people, oh, I'm part of a board games group, they say, oh, what games do you play? Monopoly.
Exactly.
And I scream and pull out my hair, so
and
let
now I hear
me
you're voluntarily...
explain. So Monopoly Deal.
This better be good.
It's a card game. What it does successfully, I think, is it takes all the fun out of Monopoly...
Takes all the fun out of Monopoly. There's so little in there to begin
exactly
with.
That's exactly right.
This is a short game, yeah?
Yeah, it is. It's about 10 minutes. So it takes,
as opposed to Monopoly.
That's right. It distills all the fun of Monopoly, which is collecting the property sets and trying to get some poor bastard to land on there and have to pay a gazillion dollars in rent.
Yeah.
That's about the only fun in Monopoly, apart from watching your friends go to jail.
And the family fights.
Yeah. So it's a card game where you've got cards that are the properties, you've got some cards that are wild, so sometimes they have a different coloured property on either end or they're completely wild.
Okay.
You have action cards, which do stuff, let you steal a property from someone or swap a property. You have action cards which say, you've passed go, collect $2 million, because it's all in millions.
Can you go to jail?
No.
Okay.
And then there are cards that are money.
There's no paper money.
There's no board.
Mm-hmm.
There's no paper money.
Mm-hmm.
The cards, the same cards that are property cards are also money cards.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, what you're trying to do is you're trying to collect three sets of properties. That's it. You can put a house and a hotel on, but it's really, it's a 10-minute take that game of, oh, you thought you had two sets, now I'm going to steal one off you.
And I'm assuming that because everybody more or less knows the rules of Monopoly, even though most families actually play it incorrectly, and that does directly contribute to the fact that it's, you know, a crap experience.
Yes.
Fairly low barrier to entry.
Absolutely.
I would have thought most people are going to pick this up and know what to do.
Well, look, the interesting thing was the version that I played, the properties were in Hong Kong.
Okay.
But, you know, because you know the colours, because you know what order the colours go in around the board, because you know that, you know, there are the black, there are four stations and two utilities and everything else has a set of three, except for the dark blue ones and the purple ones. It, as I said, you know, like I actually played it three times in like 35 minutes.
Hmm.
That's how quick it plays. Look, there, don't get me wrong, there are way better two-player card games out there. But, you know, when you're sitting there with half an hour to kill and someone says, oh, I've got this game, you know, I won't run screaming anymore.
Okay.
Yeah, look, it's actually worth a try and great entry point for people who, when they think board games, they think Monopoly.
Right. I'm going to take your word for that one. What have I been playing lately? Well, look, I actually found myself, you wouldn't read about it, at a party.
Oh, really?
Believe it or not, with a bunch of people who, get this,
play games?
Don't normally play games.
Oh.
And I was tasked with the idea of actually bringing one along that people might like to play. So you go for the easiest party game that you know is going to be a hit. Time's up. Title Recall.
Oh, yes. The never-fail ratio of that one is very high.
For the past couple of weeks, we've been tinkering with the idea of actually just, you know, sitting here talking about some of our favourite party games, and we just keep putting it off for whatever reason, because mainly we don't know what we're doing.
We talk too much, yeah.
And yeah, so, look, here's a way into that. We might talk about this a little bit more in depth in a moment, but look, just to start with, Time's Up Title Recall, the way this works, players are competing to guess the titles of books and films and TV shows and paintings and all that kind of stuff. It's essentially a memory game, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, no, because you've got the two parts. You've got the charadesy guessing type,
yeah, so
and then you've got the memory comes in after that.
Multiple rounds, you're in pairs, and the first round of clues is you can pretty much say anything except any of the words that are printed on the card. So it's that film about the bird of prey that comes from the country that is in, or the city that's in Italy, and begins with M, Maltese?
Oh, the Maltese Falcon.
Yeah, okay. So I just failed that one, obviously.
Yeah.
Second round, the clues are only one word, so I'd say bird.
Maltese Falcon.
Exactly. Third round would be mime, and that's charades.
Maltese Falcon.
Yeah, here I am flapping my arms. Yeah, right. So that's the way Time's Up works. It's good for film nerds and film
book nerds
and book nerds,
TV nerds.
Exactly, because there's plenty of popular culture names in there. It's not
song
like
nerds.
Not like Trivial Pursuit, where it's all sort of highbrow stuff.
Yeah.
There's, you know, Beatles songs and lots of popular culture in there. People look at it and they go, "I got this. I got this. This is easy." And of course, they don't,
yeah,
because it's harder and more fun than what it seems at the start. And the joy of this game is in seeing your friends make idiots of themselves.
Yep, absolutely.
It never fails. Whenever we play this, it never fails to at some point just collapse into absolute hysterics. Which it really did last Saturday night at this party. We had a great time with it. I will say that it's not a good game for introverts.
Because it does
put you on the spot in front of everybody, and if you're not up for that, then, you know, with a supportive crowd, it can be a bit tough. But it's not cruel though, because everybody does have to join in. But that's Time's Up Title Recall, and it's hands down the best party game that I know of.
Yeah, look, it's absolutely my favorite. I mean, we're going to get to it, obviously, in the next break.
Mm.
We're going to talk more about party games, but you're right, it's my favorite. It's my go-to party game that I have never seen fall flat.
And there's a brand new edition of it out as well, which I think they just update the titles and that sort of thing. So we'll talk about this a little bit more in depth. Party games next on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Ted Danson with Wolves, Never Look a GIF Horse in the Mouth, and Eddie Numbers. And it all goes into the delicious potpourri that is the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. And you know, if your potpourri is delicious, you're doing the wrong thing with it. It just occurs to me.
Minty freshness.
We've been meaning to talk about party games on this show for weeks! Weeks, I tell you! And because we just yaffle on about crap all the time, we've just been putting it off and putting it off. But I just thought I'd start the situation, or start the conversation, Mark, just by asking, what do we mean by a party game, air quotes?
Yeah, look, for me, there are a couple of situations. One is just the one you described before. You go to a party where there are people milling around talking, you know, double dipping their chips and all that sort of stuff.
Throwing their keys in the bowl.
Yeah, that's right.
No, it wasn't that kind of party, yeah, really. Okay. Really, it
and,
wasn't.
And, you know, and you want something after the small talk is over, you know, while everyone's a bit, you know, socially lubricated, you want to have an activity that gets people engaged.
Yeah, it's got to be light. It's got to be fun. It's got to have a social interaction component to it. It's not just sitting around and thinking about stuff. Does this mean a lack of strategy?
Probably, because it's not something that you want to spend a lot of time thinking about, but it doesn't mean it has to be sort of super shallow and even superficial, because even time's up Total Recall. You know, you're thinking about how long am I going to try in this card? Am I going to move on to the next one?
Yeah.
Tactical maybe more than strategic.
It keeps you engaged.
Yeah.
And ultimately, you want to, if you're bringing a game along to a party where there's non-gamers there, you want to be able to pull it out of your bag and show it to people who are going to go, I work all day and now you're going to make me work now. Do I have to have one card in my hand or two cards? I can't figure it out. It's too much. There are too many rules, man. You want to get those people excited and actually actively engaged.
Absolutely.
Time's Up Title Recall, I think, is an absolute hit, but there are other titles. Let's talk about them. Go one for one.
Yeah, you
start us
one
off.
I've played, believe it or not, at a party. Telestrations.
Telestrations is Pictionary, right?
Telestrations is like a combination of Pictionary and Chinese Whispers.
Oh.
So what you've got is you've got these little accessories. You've got a little book. And what you do is basically you get given a card and it has a saying on it or something like Mexican on a bicycle or something, you know. And you have to draw it. Then you flip over the page. I'm trying to remember how it works. And then, but the next person doesn't know what the words were. They only see the picture. They have to write what they think it is.
Okay.
And then it gets passed to the next person. They see the words, but not the picture. So then they draw what they think it is. So it's sort of like drawing words. By the time it goes around, you know, 8 or 10 people, it's amazing how shark in a bikini can become, you know, peanut butter sandwich, because people draw things, you know, in a panic and people's artistic skills are at different levels.
Is everybody doing this at the same time?
Yes. So
on,
you've got
on
yeah.
different.
Yeah. So you basically everyone has one of these books that has a drawing page and a writing page, where you can basically just see the thing before you. So yeah. So you're all it's simultaneous.
How do you actually win?
Well,
I forget.
technically, the person whose thing goes all the way around and it comes back and it means what it was meant to mean, is the winner. But really, it's like some of these games where it's more about the fun of the activity than it is about the scoring.
Okay.
I mean, you can score, but it's more about the fun.
And
that's Telestrations.
And if there's anyone listening of Chinese descent, I would like to apologise on behalf of Edge Radio and the Dice Man Cometh for Mark's perpetuation of the racist Chinese stereotype, Chinese Whispers. my next nomination is a game called... Sorry, mate.
You're right, I was wondering what I'd said.
Is a game called...
I thought I might have been offensive to bicycling Mexicans.
That was next. I let that one slide. Boulder Dash. The game of Boulder Dash.
An oldie bit of goodie.
Yeah, it's a mass market game. There's a version of it called Absolute Boulder Dash. That's the title it's released in under Australia. You're trying to define the meanings of words and acronyms and obscure movie and book titles. Everybody writes down what they think it might mean. Whoever's running the round reads out the list of answers, and you pick the right one, and you get points to, you get points for picking the right one, or points to the people who wrote the one that you pick. It's a very, very common mechanic, similar to things like Dixit,
yes.
Cards Against Humanity,
yes.
Apples to Apples. But I think Boulder Dash, for some reason, Absolute Balderdash in particular. I think for me, it's actually more the movie titles. Those are the favourite ones. Coming up with the stupid movie plots to match the ridiculous, obscure titles of movies that you've never heard of. I think it's a great game. Absolute Balderdash.
Cool. Look, I'll mention two from a company called North Star Games, who have primarily been doing party games. And in fact, we mentioned them in my Kickstarter update last week because they have the Evolutions game on Kickstarter, the dinosaur game, because that's their first foray out of the party game world. So two games they've done, Wits and Wagers, which is has a trivia element, but it's not a case of you having to know the answer. It's actually a case of you betting on who amongst your friends is most likely to know the answer. The answers are always numeric. And you write on a little dry erase board the answer to a question. It might be, how many home runs did Babe Ruth score in the 1936 season, you know? And because it's an American game.
Right.
And you write down your number. Then the cards are all flipped over and put in numerical order and from lowest to highest. And there's like an odds board. So the closer you are to the middle or the average, the lower the odds. The further out you are, the higher the odds. Then you have chips and you bet on who has got the right which answer is correct.
So it's an extrapolation of that same mechanic from Boulder Dash, but with this betting component
mixed in with it. Okay. It's got the trivia. But as I said, it's not a case of the person who knows the most is going to win. It's a case of the person who can work out the most, who's likely to be the science geek and know the science answers, who's likely to know the sports answers. Oh, five people have picked this, but oh, that's a common mistake people make. So it throws in that sort of that gambling element. There is a family version which doesn't have gambling chips. It has like a big and little meeple, and it's not so gambly, but it's the same sort of game. Quite fun, Wits and Wagers.
But still, hey, when you pull that out of your bag at the party, you can say, there's gambling.
Yeah, exactly right. The other one that I'll mention from North Star Game called Say Anything.
Similar again.
Yeah, it's a bit like Cards Against Humanity, where it's like questions, but instead of having these cards where you're trying to make funny things happen out of the choice of cards you got, you can physically say anything, which is, it says, you know, what's the worst thing that's ever happened to you? And you write something on a big dry erase board, you throw them in, you flip them over, and it has the judging mechanic as well. It can be embarrassing. It can be wild and wacky. Depends, again, on the crowd.
Is that another one that's not necessarily that great for introverts?
Probably, because they're not going to come out and tell you some really interesting story. But then again, maybe they might, because they can write it down.
Okay. So if you have Say Anything, Wits and Wagers, and Balderdash, and you have a choice of those, do you need only one of those? Is that the case? Are they all so similar?
I mean, Wits and Wagers sort of scratches the trivia itch. Whereas, is Balderdash, that doesn't really have a trivia element?
No trivia element in it at all. Yeah.
I mean, I think Say Anything is probably just a more free-form version of some of those other games like Balderdash, where it gives you a category and you've got to come up with stuff.
Okay. A couple more. Sometimes when you get a group of people together, you just want to have a fight with them. I've had nights like that. An Australian game by the Saatchi & Saatchi marketing company called The Analyst.
Oh.
All right, I have a copy of this at home. It doesn't come out an awful lot because this is guaranteed to end in an argument.
I saw that on your shelf, but I didn't think it was called The Analyst. I thought it was called something else.
The Analrapist. Little Arrested Development reference there for anyone who watched that show. You pick a subject, and you pick, in terms of like a person who is the subject, and you pick a person who is the analyst. The analyst reads a question. If this person was a type of car, what would they be?
Everybody
writes down their answer. A Ferrari, you're a Ford Cortina.
You're a Mini.
You're a Reliant with three wheels. And you find out what your friends really think, because you've got to guess who actually wrote that about you. It always ends in a fight. I love it.
I've heard about that. It sounds good.
Another quick one, Cash and Guns.
Oh, yeah.
Not a game I've actually played, but this is on my short list of party games that I'd just love to get my hands on.
Yeah, well, I had the Cash and Guns live version.
Did you?
Once, way back in the day, in Mount Stewart. I took it along. I ended up trading it away for something. Look, it was a bit of fun, but I think the real one, because it didn't have guns,
He just pointed.
Oh, no,
It was sort of meant for a bigger audience, but the cash and guns with the big foam guns.
That's right.
I'm the same. I'd love to try it as well.
It's a pool of
Border
cash.
BorderCon people, are you listening?
A pool of cash in the middle of the table, foam guns, bullet cards, and just lots of Mexican standoffs.
Mm.
And I would like to apologize for perpetuating the racist stereotype of Mexican standoffs.
Look, just quickly, a whole subgenre, the hidden trader games. Werewolf, Mafia, Resistance Avalon, a new one I can't wait to try, Two Rooms and a Boom, Are You the Traitor? That whole thing of we're all a group, we're all trying to work out who's with us and who's against it, that thing works really well, except, again, some people go, what, I'm a who and I'm a who, and those games don't work well with new people if new people are the traitors. But, you know, it can be fun with a big group. I think Two Rooms and a Boom goes up to 30. I think Ultimate Werewolf can go up to 40.
I'm waiting for my Kickstarter copy of Two Rooms and a Boom.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it hasn't turned up yet, and there have been some delays. There's always delays with
these things.
Well, I
saw they're still taking pre-orders.
Believe me, buddy, as soon as we get it, we're busting that one out. And that's our favourite party games that we've played and that we'd like to play.
It was worth the wait.
It's only taken us 3 weeks to get around to talking to that about that. Wasn't it worth it?
Yeah.
All right, coming up next, we're going to talk about something else that we know nothing about, World War II miniature gaming with Richard Taylor from DAK Bunker Rats. That's next on the Dice Man Cometh here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
Ah, yes. More dulcet tones from Brighter Later with their track Come and Go. And you've come and you've gone and you're back again here with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with Trent and Mark and our special guest in the studio, Richard, from the DAK Bunker Rats.
What's DAK stand for?
Yeah, that was going to be my question.
That's actually something one of our club members came up with, because we actually didn't have a name for quite a while. And we decided to do Bunker Rats because we figured that we're sort of in a bunker and we're a bunch of rats, so there you go. Wargamer Rats. And that was a homage to the Desert Rats, of course. And then DAK, that came from doing a homage to the DAK Africa Corps. That was fighting in the desert against the bunker against the Desert Rats, and one of the guys actually figured that DAK, because you know you could play it on base where our venue is, which is Amruna Court. So he figures, if we go DAS Amruna Court, there you go. So if you translate that to like Monty Python German, it's the Amruna Court Bunker Rats.
All right. Yeah. Look. Clearly, we're dealing with somebody who knows what he's talking about here, and we are totally
out of our depth now.
Out of our depth. So, Richard Taylor, you are a representative of the DAK Bunker Rats, a World War II miniature gaming group based here in Hobart.
Correct.
You guys have been running for about 7 or 8 years.
Yeah, that'd be fair to say.
And this is hardcore historical simulation, specifically the system is Flames of War.
Yeah, Flames of War is the game that we play.
Okay, now how is this different to your Warhammers and your Warhammer 40Ks and stuff?
Well, firstly, it's a historical game, so there's an immediate difference. The other things, too, is that the size of the games are a little bit bigger than 40K. 40K is more of a smaller scale skirmish because you buy your stuff in like squads,
mm-hmm.
and you build it up to a platoon or company level. Flames of War just takes it to the next level where it's company to battalion level, depending on which nation you run. Obviously, some nations like the Soviets and the Italians and Romanians had more men, so they get to field theirs a bit more. And then you have like the British Commonwealth, the United States, tended to field smaller units, so it's reflected in the game.
This is recreating actual historical battles?
No, it has the flexibility to be played like just normal pickup games, like 40K can. Mm-hmm. You've got your own nations. Flames of War is divided up into three different periods based on the war. So you've got early war, which is 1939 to 1941. And then you've got mid-war, which is 1942 to 1943. And then you've got the late war period, which is 1944 and takes you right up to the end in 45. So the games are played within the periods. There are different books for different periods and different campaigns within the period. And
you talked about the different races. So can you play pretty much any race, any country that was involved in World War II?
Pretty much. You can play pretty much anyone that fought in North Africa and in the European theatre. Flames of War's only just started moving into the Pacific theatre. The first book of that is Rising Sun, and that has the Japanese lists in it for early war, and that's focusing on the border wars between the Soviet Union and the Japanese just before the war started.
Can I bring my orcs from Warhammer and put them up against the Italians?
Sadly, no.
Okay. So this is very much a live game. It's a Kiwi game, Mark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really?
It's from a New Zealand company.
Yeah,
which is
Kiwis.
Yeah, which is great. But this is a live, ongoing thing. It's being supported. There's new products coming out all the time.
Correct, yes.
And this has been going for a while as well.
Flames of War, I think it's about 10 years old or so, and then the miniatures themselves, they started actually making the miniatures before they made the game.
Mm-hmm.
So the miniatures have been around for about, I think, 12 years. Yeah.
Okay. And it's mostly a two-player game, although there are rules for multiple players as well, which I'd imagine would get very, very messy, a little bit like war.
Yeah, you can do...
Does that follow a structured turn?
Does follow a structured turn. Does have a formal turn structure. It's a little bit similar in 40K, so you actually have like a move, a shoot, a assault step.
I mean, I'm just wondering how chaotic it might get, because you hear about this idea of the fog of war, right, where no one's really got any idea what's actually happening. Is there some kind of element of that in it?
Yes and no. A bit hard with tabletop miniatures,
because
you enjoy the freedom that a lot of commanders don't, which is, well,
you
if you can't
see
something, you just take a walk and see it for yourself. But there are elements like ambushes. You can put units in ambush which are on the table but not on the table, so you can put them down when you're ready to put them down, but your opponent can counter that with various tricks and units.
And I believe you can call in air support.
You can call in air support.
Which is a great concept.
Oh, it is. When it comes on.
All right.
When it comes on.
That sounds like there's a story behind that.
It's because it uses a dice system. Sometimes, there's lots of hilarious outcomes. Sometimes the plane rock up once and then that's it. They're back at the bar telling all their mates about what they did. The cases where
that's
rock
the
up
Air
all.
Force for you. That's the right. Air Force.
Now, look, my old man used to build models when I was a kid, and he's nuts on his World War II history.
Mm.
And as a consequence, I know more about World War II aircraft than what I care to know, because I got dragged around air shows a lot when I was a kid. How historically accurate is it? Do you really get down into the nitty gritty of I don't know how economical this tank was?
it's quite historically accurate to an extent. Of course, there are the limitations with wargaming, because you can field things in wargaming that you really wouldn't be able to do in real life because of various conditions like economic factors or just numbers, plain numbers. But they try and rein that in as best as they can. But the units that are in the game, historically accurate, they perform pretty much historically as they should have. Again, with some limitations based on just the natural tendencies of gaming.
And do you, with your group, do you play any other systems? Because I know when Mike was here from the Van Diemen Wargamers, he was talking about that most of those guys, they do two or three different systems.
Well, some of us play other games. I myself play a few other games. I play DBA, which is a quick play Ancients rule set that you can play at any scale. Some of us play Muskets and Tomahawks. That's a French and Indian Wars skirmish game. Plays beautifully. And you get Daniel Day-Lewis, if you've seen Last of the Mohicans. And Madeline West, yeah. And then there's a couple of guys that play 40K, Magic the Gathering.
Yep.
A couple of guys play some historical board games.
Command and Colors Ancients, those sort of block board war games. You seen those?
I've been a long time, but yeah, I remember that. And then, what else? X-Wing, I've been trying to get him to
Yes.
We mostly just play Flames of War, but it doesn't mean that we leave other systems out on the out on the sideline.
Okay, Richard, serious question. Now, what you're essentially doing here is recreating bloodthirsty battles as entertainment. I'm being a little glib, okay? But I mean, do you ever sort of stop to consider that? I mean, the whole idea of war and as entertainment?
I don't find war as entertainment. Mm. Being a historical war gamer, I prefer just to see the historical content. There has been times where we've had sit down chats about, you know, various things. Like, you can run the Waffen SS, for example, in Flames of War. They're an actual unit that you can actually do companies for. And some people we've all got views on the SS. Like, there's one guy that won't touch them at all, particularly because of their crimes. Mm. There's a few of us that will just play it because we're just playing it for the game. But we do keep in mind that, yeah, they did some nasty things, but we're not doubting that, you know, in some cases, not all men did these nasty things, but they did fight a lot harder and a lot strong, you know, a lot longer than what a lot of forces did.
Well, the reason I bring it up is because I see that Flames of War is moving into the Vietnam.
It's already done that.
Yeah. Oh, really?
And, they've already moved into the Arab-Israeli wars. That's just came out.
Wow, really? Yeah. Okay. And we've talked about this on the show before, that this historical reenactment, once it gets into living memory, these kinds of questions start to come up, at least for us. And that does make me a little bit... You want to make sure it's being treated sensitively, if possible?
We do. We do keep in mind that of the sensitivities that comes with historical wargaming, because it happens. I mean, it's just a byproduct of it, unfortunately. But it's, as long as we keep that in mind, we're just here to have fun.
All right. Really.
And if people want to get in touch with your club, what's the best way to do so?
Ah, well, we just remembered we had a Facebook group, which
oh, good.
Hey.
We did have a forum that then we just put that on the back burner, and then we just remembered we had a Facebook group, so you can actually find us on Facebook. DAK Bunkerats,
DAK Bunkerats. And listen, we should also just give a shout out to Mike and everybody from the Van Diemen's miniature wargaming group as well. Those guys were meeting at the Brisbane Hotel until recently. They've apparently going to be changing venues, though.
Okay.
So we'll bring more deets on that as they come to hand. But in the meantime, Richard and the DAK Bunk or DAK Bunker Rat. Sorry, I'm keep thinking of just pants.
It is pants on, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pants on.
Pants on historical.
There was one time it wasn't, but we'll keep that away. I'll tell you about it later.
Okay.
Look up Richard Taylor and his mates, Pants on Facebook. Mate, thanks very much for coming in and explaining. That sounds really interesting, and maybe just get us some photos. We can stick them up on our Facebook page as well, so people can see what you're talking
definitely
about.
Definitely pants on photos. Yeah. Now, look, we're off to a board gaming convention on the weekend. I'm sure there's bound to be some Martin Wallace fans, and in fact, I'm sure there'll be someone there with brass in their pocket.
Oh, God.
Yeah, brass in pocket, an oldie but a goodie. Bit of a Martin Wallace reference there. Now, we've got something coming up here. I don't know what it's going to be like. Let's see what's happening.
You want hard-hitting board game news? You want all the latest must-know events from the tabletop world? You want to know everything and anything in geek culture today? Then you will be disappointed, because this is Half-Ass News. The dregs from the bottom of the news barrel that even a broke drunk man won't stoop to drink. And now, speaking of broke drunk men, here's Trent.
Wow. You know, I think I liked it better when you were just going, it's got some news, some half-ass news. Can you do that? Could you do that next time?
Sure.
Or should I just make you do that every week?
Hey, I've got a few of them up my sleeve, actually.
Thank you for the introduction, Mark.
No pleasure.
Half news time. The Tokyo Game Market took place in Osaka this week. I don't know why it's called the Tokyo Game Market when it happens in Osaka. Is Osaka a part of Japan? Is Osaka a part of Tokyo? I don't know. My Japanese geography, completely just null and void. I had a stopover there once at Narita. It was very nice.
We're into half-assed travel now, are we?
The Tokyo Game Market gives the local Japanese designers a chance to spruik and sell their wares. This is the event that brought us Love Letter, Machikoro more recently, and also the game Trains, which I will never ever play because it's about trains. The pattern that sort of seems to be happening with games out of Japan is this trend of the micro game, games with very, very few elements. It's not because Japanese apartments are so small. That's another racist stereotype that you're perpetuating there, Mark.
I can tell.
I'll kindly have you stop that. It's got everything to do with a certain love of a minimal aesthetic that I believe that the Japanese
very, very zen-like.
So anyway, we can look for more and more of those kind of micro games and Japanese games in general, because Japan and Korea seem to be like the awakening.
A lot of games coming out of Korea.
Yeah.
Tok Tok Woodman was a Korean game.
The Dungeons & Dragons promotional overdrive continues for Wizards of the Coast, with the fifth edition of the game coming out and just announced through WizKids. It was only a matter of time. In the fourth quarter of 2014, D&D Dice Masters.
Oh, no.
That's right.
Is this Aquarius?
Yeah, well, it's the Marvel X-Men Avengers Dice Master.
Lord of the Rings. There's a Lord of the Rings session.
Is there?
Yeah.
Oh,
that
God.
Came out before the Marvel X-Men Avengers one.
So I'm predicting that by the time the new Star Wars movie that J.J. Abrams is making comes out, we're going to have Star Wars Dice Game. Gloom is getting a second edition. This is a popular little card game that many people enjoy. It's getting a bit of a rules update through Atlas Games, and that's coming out in August to come together in time with Gen Con as well later in the year. Other games coming out from Plaid Hat Games. Well, Mice and Mystics is already out, but they're doing another expansion for that. Downwood Tales, a 100-page storybook with all new characters and everything. I could tell you when that's coming out from Plaid Hat Games, but it's pointless because it's going to be late anyway, because all their crap always is. Is this half-assed enough? So far?
Yeah, it's right up the half-assed trail that I can see.
One game that is being launched at Spiel in October in Germany, in Essen.
Essen-Spiel.
The Essen-Spiel. That's generating a bit of buzz is a Euro game called Greenland. You heard about this one?
No.
The designer is a bloke called Phil Eklund. Now, you know how they say, game design, it's not rocket science.
Mm-hmm.
Phil Eklund's a rocket scientist.
I know his name from somewhere. What's he designed?
He made a game called High Frontiers, which is about launching rockets. It's actually about the science of launching rockets into trans, into orbit and going out into the outer solar.
Wherever rockets go.
So Greenland is a worker placement game about tribes living in Greenland, killing seals, raising kids, dwindling natural resources and bad weather. Here's the twist on it, though. Depending on what religion your tribe chooses to pursue, monotheism or polytheism, you get to choose your own scoring mechanic.
Right.
Yeah, so look, it's generating a bit of buzz. Sounds interesting. Mm. That's Greenland. It's not out till much later in the year, past October. Got some game figures for you. Sales figures.
Oh, okay, yes.
Rather. Okay.
Always interested in this.
Zombicide.
Mm.
Yeah, not a game that we're necessarily that impressed with.
See, look, I've seen it played. Seems to drag on for hours and hours. Looks very pretty.
Cool, mini or not, reckon that they've sold over 60,000 copies of this game. And that's after the original Kickstarter.
Yeah, because it was another Kickstarter.
Of just under 5,500.
Wow.
So originally just under 5,500 people kickstarted it, but 60,000 plus have gone on to buy it.
Wow.
Since
then. Yeah, that's pretty good.
It's a very, very successful business model, if indeed that is the case. Or maybe they've just printed that many. I don't know. They're hoping to sell them. I don't know. And in terms of sales and dubious claims, Games Workshop, which has just released the seventh edition of their Warhammer rule set, they claim it's already outselling the sixth edition of the game, but they have not released any figures to back that up. Well, they would say that,
yes,
wouldn't
that's
they?
Right.
And that's half-assed news.
That was not that half-assed, Trent.
I did a little bit of preparation.
Yeah.
It looks at this. Actually, some interesting sort of corporate, to-ings and fro-ings with people suing each other sometimes. And
look, here's the thing that people should know about this show is Trent turns up with a book with pages and pages and pages of preparation, and me, yep, that's my one sheet of paper with my preparation. Because it's all in here, folks. It's all in here.
I like to think of it as you being genuinely half-assed, and I'm just doing a very good job of faking
it. Yeah, you have to try really hard to be hard to be half-assed.
And listen, we've got to give a hoi to everyone that we're going to see at BorderCon in Albury this weekend, particularly to Cameron and Joe, and also to Neil. Guys, we're really looking forward to catching up. This is going to be a great weekend.
And Neil, I just read on Board Game Geek, is sick.
Oh, no!
Apparently he has an annual sort of flu that he gets once a year. Normally he takes it a bit earlier in the year and gets organised. But this year he got a bit busy and forgot about it, and it's come upon him this week. So, Neil, if you're out there, we hope you're feeling better. We're really looking forward to seeing you in Albury this weekend. It's going to be one hell of a weekend.
Yeah, mate, you owe it to us to turn up and spread your germs amongst the 300-odd gamers who are going to be turning up to BorderCon.
What's a game convention without gamer funk?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
What do they call it? Pox. PAX POX at PAX.
And just also a word of warning, I'll be the guy in the loud shirt who is recording everybody, because we're going to try and bring you some edited highlights of some of the games that we play at BorderCon next week on the show.
Yeah, look, it's really exciting. It's going to be a great weekend. We are out of time again, but this week we're out of time after we talk about the party games and not before. So we're going to leave you with a Tassie track from Hannah, 2020 Hindsight. We are the Dice Men Cometh. You've been listening to Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Join us again, same bat time, same bat channel next week, and we'll have the BorderCon highlights. Until then,
Geister, Geister, Schatzmeister!
Play more games!
This has been an edit of the Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.